Well, welcome back to another Comfort Reads episode. This time I'm joined by another one of my sisters, Katie Heasley. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Seth.
Thank you for joining me. Katie is someone who lives practically next door to me, so that makes it convenient for her to come over and record in our socially distanced office space.
Yeah, well.
Although we're kind of...
We're in a bubble.
Yeah, we've considered that you and Mom are in our bubble.
So. Yeah.
There's two sisters down, still one to go.
Right.
So, tell my listeners about yourself.
Okay, I am Katie. I am Seth's only younger sister. And I am the globetrotter of the family. I've lived in three different countries, Japan, China, and of course, the good old USA. Do I need to tell them anything else?
No, not really.
Bro?
You were also a bookseller for a long time.
Yes, I was, definitely.
And we are a family of readers, but...
I take it to the extreme.
Yeah.
At times, I'm reading a book a day.
Wow.
Thank God for Kindle Unlimited.
Yes.
They're not all brilliant books, but you find some gems in there.
Yeah. Longtime listeners to my podcasts will perhaps recognize Katie as the person who I've referenced a few times in regard to the fact that you were present for the tsunami in Japan.
That I was.
Yes.
Yep.
And so
March 11th, 2011.
I was going to say, that was a long time ago, isn't it? 10 years now. I cannot believe that.
10 years, yep.
Well, if people, I'll have to look up to see if I can find that that article that you wrote for Oregon Live and,
yeah.
And put it in the show notes if people want to read about that harrowing time.
Yeah, harrowing is a good word for it. Yeah. Being present for a 9.0 earthquake and watching the town you were living in getting destroyed by a tsunami, it's an experience that you don't want to have. Let me put it that way. So... anyway.
Does that experience make 2020 seem like, yeah, whatever?
Well, you know, I was in Japan for the tsunami and I was in China when COVID broke out.
So you're saying you're responsible.
So I'm saying you might not want to visit Oregon anytime soon.
Right. Okay, so this is a Comfort Reads episode. And when I asked you to come up with your Comfort Reads, I don't remember if you threw out a couple titles, but I think maybe you did. But what's the kind of broad category of comfort reading for you?
You know, it's a little bit difficult to say because at different times I will have different comfort reads. Mm. A lot of the time what I'm looking for is just something that is fun and familiar. Okay. And so at various times, I've reread Sherlock Holmes, or I've reread a couple of books of my favorite authors. Mm. I'm big into urban fantasy. My two favorite authors in that genre are Jim Butcher of the Dresden Files and Ilona Andrews. And it's a husband and wife team, did... Kate Daniels series, and my other favorite, Hidden Legacy. And other than that, I also like just cheap, quick sci-fi romance books. But I didn't think that Seth would really want to read Ice Planet Barbarians.
Hey,
so
yeah, I'm up for whatever. As long as I can find it on audio, that is.
Yeah. I think that one might be on audio, but whatever. But, of course, another of my favorite authors is Terry Pratchett. And anyway, the comfort read that I chose was from Terry Pratchett's Discworld.
Nice.
Yeah.
And this is it's a series that you've read everything from?
I think that I've read everything. It is a big, sprawling world of a series. I read the first three books a long time ago. And then later on, someone recommended that I read the Watch books.
Okay.
And Discworld is broken up into several series. You've got the Unseen University series. You've got the Witches. You've got the Watch. A couple of independent books in there. And then you've got the Moist von Lipwig books.
Gotcha.
And so I absolutely love Discworld. Moise von Liebig, I'm not sure if he's my favorite character. I think that might be Sam Vimes of The Watch, but I love Moist. Okay. So I decided on going postal.
Right. So you are also, you're a big rereader.
Big rereader, yeah.
I've talked to people who they're like, I never ever reread books, and then I'll find out that, oh, a new Dresden Files book came out, and so you're rereading the whole series.
Yeah, I did that not too long ago, actually, with Ilona Andrews, when a new book came out in their Hidden Legacy series.
Okay.
And, but yeah, I am a big rereader. To me, it's like visiting old friends.
Right. I mean, that's kind of what comfort reading is about. I mean, it's not for everybody, right? There's some people who are like, no, it's just got to be like something in a particular category to take my mind off whatever is bothering me. But yeah, there's definitely something about, I mean, like when the first episode we did for this was the Prydain Chronicles, and they're Colin and I talked about it and how like it's like putting on comfortable old shoes. And so,
yeah.
Cool. Okay. So going postal, why don't you tell us, actually, you said the Discworld series is pretty sprawling. Is there a way to summarize what Discworld is?
Okay, so Discworld. It is the disc, which is on the back of four elephants who are on the back of a giant turtle swimming through space.
Right.
The great Atooin. And anyway, the disc is a flat world, and the science of it is actually better than anything that flat earthers say. I'm just saying.
Shocking.
Yeah. And so anyway, there are lots of different parts of the disc. The one that most of the books take place around is the great city of Ankh Morpork. And it combines, you know, all the absolute worst things about large cities in one stinky package.
Right.
It is reigned over by the eccentric tyrant, and he proudly takes that name, that title, Lord Vetinari, who knows exactly where to kind of put his thumb on the weight. And so Discworld, different bits are set in different places. Like the witches, they're up in a country called Lanker, which is like rural England. You visit places like the Agatian Empire, which sort of takes the place of China, Japan, East Asia in general, Klatch, which is like the Middle East and India, 4X, which is Australia. And then, as I said, you've got Ankh Morpork, which is sort of, it's sort of modeled after London.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about this specific book, Going Postal. And I listened to it on audio because the library had it. Mm-hmm. And I just always assumed it ended with a T, not a K. Ankh Morpork, right?
Morpork.
Yes, Morpork.
Yeah, Morpork is actually a small owl. It actually exists.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So why don't we transition from talking about Discworld in general to Going Postal specifically. And this is a Moise von Liebig novel.
Yes. It's one in which he is introduced. Hmm. And when we first meet him, he is attempting to escape from prison before he can be hanged.
Right.
But he is not able to escape, and he is hanged.
Right. He's very optimistic about his chances of not being hanged.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I find the opening sequence of him, you know, trying to get out of being hanged and all of that to be very amusing. And I love the jail folks around him who are so proud of his effort at digging himself out of the jail, and, you know, talk about how much they're going to miss him once he's been hanged.
Yes.
And, you know, frightfully decent people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But he is not able to avoid being hanged. Mm-hmm. He does get hanged to within a half an inch of his life.
Right.
And it turns out that it's because Lord Vetinari has a job for him. He wants Moist to become Postmaster General.
Right.
Yes. And it leads to one of my favorite lines in the book when Vetinari's, well, actually, one of my favorite lines is Moist's last words, which are, "I commend my soul to any god that can find it."
Nice.
Yeah. But anyway, Vetinari, after Moist is hanged and he wakes up in Lord Vetinari's office with a really awful crick in his neck, he is interviewed for the job of Postmaster General.
Right.
Moist finds this all deeply suspicious. And anyway, he tells Lord Vetinari, "When you sentenced Alfred Spangler, what's his alias, you said he was a natural-born criminal, a fraudster by vocation, a habitual liar, a perverted genius, and totally untrustworthy." And then, later on, he says, "Of course I accept the job as a natural-born criminal, habitual liar, fraudster, and totally untrustworthy, perverted genius." To which Lord Vetinari says, "Capital, welcome to government service."
Very nice.
And just the reason that I love the Discworld books so much is because of exchanges like that.
Mm-hmm.
It is just so clever.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Douglas Adams, the very limited amount of Douglas Adams I've actually read. And honestly, I'm not that big of a fan of Douglas Adams because I find that it alternates between really, really brilliant stuff and just complete drivel, where I'm just like, "What? Where was the editor in this?" Because that's a bad joke.
Yeah, but, yeah. Terry Pratchett, I do find, is kind of a tighter writer than Douglas Adams, but there are a lot of similarities in the wordplay.
Yes.
And the characters who are just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Although, have you ever read Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency?
Mm-hmm.
I recommend you read that one.
Okay, I think I might have it.
I honestly think that those two books in that series are much better than Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay. Now, see, just to be clear, so that I don't get flamed on Twitter, the Hitchhiker's Guide radio play is tremendous.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I love every bit of it. The book, I just don't like as much.
Yeah.
And it's an adaptation of it. It adds some stuff. Maybe that's like, you know, I'm fine with movies making changes, but somehow that in written form, when you're adding stuff to it, if it doesn't hit the same way, then I don't know. I didn't like it. But that's okay. One of my favorite things, and I guess we should stay pretty spoiler light here, but during the interview process, of course, Vetinari says to him, "Of course, you have a choice. You can accept the job or you can walk out that door."
Mm-hmm.
And Moist von Lipwig is untrusting enough because he files that
under deeply suspicious.
Yes. And so he stands up and goes over and looks and sees that the door involves an apparently endless drop.
Yes. There's nothing beyond the door, including a floor.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he says, "Very well, I accept."
Yep.
But Vetinari, you know, then says to him about, you know, the illusion of having a choice to make is useful.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting theme that is carried through the whole book about about making choices.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it comes back.
The illusion of choice.
Yeah, it comes back with a tremendous joke at the very end of the book as well.
And believe it or not, we revisit that joke in the second book, Making Money.
Okay.
Yeah. Several things continue on. Like, for instance, Moist has a habit of stealing Drum Not the Secretary's pencils. And every time the two come into contact, Drum Not loses a pencil.
Hmm.
And that carries through both books.
Yeah.
So Terry Pratchett loves a good brick joke. He really does. And it's, the brick joke is when the joke comes back around.
Right.
And so, yeah, you will find something said early on that is paid off later in such clever ways.
Mm-hmm. I love that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
the fun part about this one is, as of course, the post office is in not just complete disarray, but not actually functioning.
Right? Yeah.
It still exists, but all they do is collect letters, yeah, and they never get to their destination.
Exactly, yes. And the letters end up under piles of pigeon poop,
right,
basically. They get stuffed in different places. And, mm-hmm, and yeah, so Moist is tasked with bringing the post office back to life.
Right. And in the meantime, for people to try to communicate, there's another method of communicating across long distances called
the clacks.
That's right.
Yeah.
Where it's like a semaphore kind, yes, of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the conflict in the book comes between, well, A, Moist battling with himself about not running away, mm-hmm, essentially, and a rivalry between the post office and the clacks.
Yeah, and it's interesting how that is handled. Part of it, they call it the Grand Trunk, and some of the background to that is the Grand Trunk Railroad in, yeah, England. Mm-hmm. And the problem with the clacks and with the Grand Trunk Railroad was basically cutting costs, right, to the bone and trying to drive profits up. And
not doing maintenance.
Not doing maintenance, yeah. Yeah. Things become dangerous. They fail because the people running it don't actually care about it. All they want is to make money off of it.
Right.
And, you know, things like that obviously don't happen nowadays.
Right. Well, I don't think you literally have people, you know, falling off of the edge of cliffs and stuff like you did for the clacks, where there's a certain amount of acceptable falling people that, yes, they were allowing.
Yeah. Well, nowadays there's just a certain amount of child labor you can,
right,
get away with.
Yeah, yeah, true.
And
there's, yeah, definitely, I mean, metaphorically, still people falling through the cracks and, mm-hmm, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the clacks is being run by this man called Reacher Guilt. And when Moist von Lipgig finally meets this guy, Moist is a con man.
Right.
He has a dozen aliases. He knows how to work people.
Yeah.
And one of his signatures is a good, honest handshake. Mm-hmm. Look somebody right in the eye, and they think you're an honest man. Mm-hmm. And when Moist and Reacher meet, Moist immediately thinks, this man is the greatest fraud I have ever met.
Right.
And he is. Reacher is, like Moist, only taken to another level. Mm-hmm. Moist has lines he won't cross.
Right.
And when Mr. Pump, whom we will probably have to discuss,
yes,
he explains to Moist that all of his, that all the conning he's done, he's caused bankruptcies, he's robbed banks, and he finds out that one of his bank robbing things harmed someone he is getting close to.
Right.
Mr. Pump brings it home to him that actually Moist has harmed people. Mm-hmm. He thinks he hasn't.
Right.
He's sure that it's all, you know, it, I mean, yeah, okay, so I take their money, but, you know, it's not like I'm hurting anybody, and,
right,
and they're suckers anyway, mm-hmm, and so, you know, and anyway, Mr. Pump brings it home to him that he's taken money from people who had very little.
Yeah.
He, and that when he robs banks, when banks fail, it's not bankers who starve,
right,
which is the simple truth.
Yeah.
And so that kind of brings Moist off of his high horse. Mm-hmm. But when he sees Reacher Guilt, he knows that there are lines he won't cross that Reacher Guilt will.
Yes. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the characters, because mm-hmm, there's Mr. Grote, who is the existing... Not really. He's not the postmaster general. He's just a postman, right?
He's like an 80-year-old junior postman, Grote.
Right. Grote is, despite the fact he's a junior and the post office isn't really doing anything, he's proud of the job and dedicated to the job, despite, yes, the fact that there really is no job.
Yeah, but you find out that Groton Stanley, who's the apprentice, they actually...
Is he the guy with the pins?
Yes.
Okay.
He's the guy with the pins. Yes. They actually have an important place in the post office because on Discworld, which operates on principles of magic, when large amounts of writing come together, they become sentient, more or less.
Right.
And so the post office, it wants the mail to be delivered.
Right.
And it chooses Moist for the job.
Yes.
And so, but Groton Stanley have been kind of keeping it calm by following the regulations.
Right.
Making sure the inkwells are filled.
Yes.
Making sure all the little jobs that need to be done around the post office are done.
Yes.
Following the regulations.
And prepare the way for the Messiah.
Pretty much, yeah.
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 Yes. And then you have Mr. Pump, who is, of course, a golem.
He's a golem.
And golems are an entire... You know,
they're kind of a race,
yeah.
In a way. Yeah, there's someone once said that there's kind of an unofficial golem trilogy. There's a watch book called Feet of Clay that introduces what golems are, and features the first free golem. They run things where nobody sees them. They Mr. Pump turned a pump. For over a century. And then some of them, you know, they draw carts or, you know, they operate pieces of machinery because they never get tired. They never need to be fed.
Right.
Nothing.
Yes. And so Mr. Pump has been tasked with basically keeping an eye on Mr. Lipwig, as he calls him. And the audiobook that I listened to, he's voiced like a German, you know, Frankenstein type of character. You know, good morning, Mr. Lipwig.
Yes.
It's quite amusing. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'm sure that the audiobooks have a lot of fun things to them. I have never listened to any of them. I don't listen to audiobooks, not really. But one of the things that you might have missed was... a lot of the visual puns in the book. For instance, the greengrocer. When Moist goes to find the greengrocer in one scene, the greengrocer's speech is peppered with unnecessary apostrophes.
I figured it was.
Yes. Because, of course...
The famous greengrocer's apostrophe.
Yes, of course. The one that makes everything plural or is just there because there's an S.
Yes.
Yeah. And so any greengrocer you meet in the books will have their... will have a bunch of unnecessary apostrophes in their speech.
That's fun.
Yeah. And that's part of, you know, the sort of visual punning that... Yeah. Terry Pratchett does. He likes to take tropes and turn them on their heads. And so you've got a wizard who is not really good at being a wizard.
Right.
You've got a barbarian hero called Cohen the Barbarian, and he's very old. There's the Silver Horde, which is made up of elderly barbarians. A bunch of wizards who are not really wise characters. One of them is the head of Inadvisably Applied Magic, for instance. Yeah. They enjoy playing with magic and not much else.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that magic is real in Discworld, as are a variety of gods. Which is kind of fun.
Yes, yes. One of my favorite gods of Discworld turns up in this book. Anoia, goddess of things that get stuck in drawers.
Right.
Yes. And it's become such a, you know, once you read something like that, it sticks in your head. And so every time I try to open a drawer and something gets stuck inside it, I think to myself, Anoia! You know, but yes. I'm weird.
Yeah. So other characters, since it's harder to keep track of characters when you listen to it on audio. There's the love interest who was, her family was defrauded by. Glint.
Reacher Gilt.
Gilt, yes.
Yeah.
What's her name? I can't remember.
Adora Belle Dearheart.
Right.
Who is probably a takeoff on Ada Lovelace, who was, of course, a woman who worked on early computers.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, Adora Belle Dearheart, whose name is not funny, and thus she has no sense of humor at all.
Right.
And she smokes a lot and wears high heels, and you really don't want to bother her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's delightful in that way.
Yes, she is. And, yeah, eventually in a later book, she ends up as the head of the Klacks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it takes a couple of books for it to get there, and
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this one, so, you know, one of the major plot points is the wager, right? Because mm-hmm. here, Moist has started to deliver letters again, and there's some people who are horrified by the idea that the letters are going to be delivered 30 years late.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fun to see some of the good side effects of mm-hmm. of those things. But as he gets it back up and running, then he wants to really make a splash and actually deliver post
between Ankh-Morpork's
and...
Yeah,
the other city. But.
There are several different cities. The closest one is Stolat, and he delivers post there.
Mm-hmm. Pony Express style.
Sorry. Yeah, Pony Express style, and on a completely crazy horse.
Yes.
There are other cities on the Stow Plains and more cities farther away. So one of them is it Quirm or Genua? Anyway, one of those.
Yeah, I think it was Genua.
Yeah, is a city that he wants to deliver mail to, and there's the wager mm-hmm. that he can get it there faster than the Klacks.
Even though it should take him a month to get there on horseback or with mm-hmm. carriages.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it would be next to impossible for him to do it because the Klacks, it operates line of sight, and just as quickly as the people in the towers can get the message out, that's how fast it'll get to the next right. tower.
Well, in a flat world, too, it has even fewer mm-hmm. Obstacles, right? Because it yep. doesn't have the curvature of the Earth to deal with, so even faster.
No. You've just got physical obstacles in the way and mm-hmm. the local speed of light.
I hadn't considered that.
Yes. Yeah. It's all part of the Discworld magic. Depending on the strength of the magic field, light goes slower or faster, which means that they do have times of the day, you know, in various parts of the world. Local light speed may be faster or slower, depending on how thick the magic is in an area. And so, anyway.
You're telling me it's not hard science fiction, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, it'll take a matter of hours if there isn't an issue with one of the Klacks towers, and of course they're failing all the time,
mm-hmm.
But it would take a matter of days or weeks for mail to get to Genua.
Mm-hmm.
But Moist makes this wager anyway.
Right.
That he can get a letter there, he can get mail there faster than the Klacks can.
Right.
And so...
We should probably leave it there.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, you know, any good con man, when he makes a wager, you like to think that he has an out. And I don't want to reveal if he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you find it is an interesting thing because it is so very characteristic of Moist to promise something that he knows he can't deliver.
Yeah.
And then
run away.
And then run away.
Yeah.
But in this case, he's got to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that leads us to the smoking GNU.
Right.
That GNU means a message that is meant for the Klacks. It means a message that is meant to go on without stopping and then to turn around and come back at the end of the Klacks line.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the characters, Adora Belle's brother, his name is going back and forth mm-hmm. in the Klacks line. Just his name and the code GNU.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, Terry Pratchett died a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now, sometimes when he's brought up, people will say, Terry Pratchett, GNU.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it's just a testament to how deeply his writing has affected people.
Right.
You know, that he's got that, you know, keep his name alive.
Right.
One of the things that is said in the books is man does not die as long as his name is spoken.
Right.
And that's why the names of dead Klaxmen are sent on a GNU circuit to keep their names alive in the Klax.
Right. Yeah, I think I really enjoyed the book, by the way. Mm-hmm. I didn't ever tell you, but it was delightful. It was a fun kind of departure from what I typically read, because I'm, you know, I had never read any of the Discworld books. I have The Color of Magic, which I think is the first one. But I remember asking you at some point, and I wanted to ask you about this for people who are thinking about maybe picking up Discworld. Mm-hmm. Where do you recommend people to start?
You know, it kind of depends on the person. I didn't think the first few books of the series were all that great. Mm-hmm. They're interesting because, you know, it takes these fantasy tropes that you're used to seeing, the wise old wizard, the brave hero who can overcome anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it introduces this wizard named Rincewind, who, number one, is not wise, number two, is terrible at being a wizard, and number three, runs away whenever there's an issue. But he's been chosen by the gods. No matter how hard he tries to run away, he always ends up in the middle of things.
Right.
So they're kind of fun, but they're not Pratchett's best work. Mm-hmm. I love the Watch books.
Okay.
Starts with the book Guards, and there are reading orders online that you can look at. Discworld reading order, just Google it, and it'll show you what the Watch books are. The Witches of Lanker is a good series. There are also the Tiffany Aching books. They're aimed at a younger crowd because the heroine in them is very young.
Okay.
But they're still really good. The very last book that Terry Pratchett wrote was the end book in that series, the Tiffany Aching books.
Okay.
Yeah. And there are some kind of independent books here and there within the Discworld that don't neatly belong into any one series. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there's one called Monstrous Regiment, another called The Amazing Maurice and His Educated Rodents. there's Moving Pictures. Yeah. And then you've also got the Death books.
Right.
And they're really interesting. But like I said, the Watch books are the ones that I really love.
Okay.
And I also love the Moist Von Lipwig books.
Okay.
So they're the ones that I regularly reread.
Okay. I mean, we've talked about this before, right? Where trying to recommend any particular thing to anyone, you kind of have to know what their tastes are. And in a series like Discworld with such variety in it, you kind of have to know, well, what's your thing? Because since the whole series isn't this one particular thing.
It really is very kind of dependent on what your personal tastes are. Mm-hmm. The Watch series, it's about the cops of Ankh-Morpork Pork. And by the way, it's apparently being turned into a TV series called The Watch.
Oh. And
I've seen promos for it, and it looks a little bit odd. Some of the characters look like how I had visualized them. Others really don't. But it's an interesting series. It's a really good series. And just everything in there pays out beautifully. Sam Vimes, who's introduced as the Night Watch captain, he has an amazing character arc through the books. Just absolutely fantastic. One of the best I've ever read. A lot of the sort of independent books that don't belong anywhere are also really worth reading. I love Monstrous Regiment. There's also one called Small Gods that is, it's just an absolutely beautiful book. It's about faith.
Huh.
Terry Pratchett was an atheist.
Right.
But he writes excellent characters of faith. You know, he does take jabs at them. There's one constable called whose name is Constable Visit the Ungodly with Explanatory Pamphlets. And he and his friend whose name is Smite the Unbeliever with Cunning Arguments. They are dreaded for their delivery of pamphlets and arguments in the name of Om, one of the major Discworld gods. Mm. You know, and that takes a lot of jabs
Chick Tracts.
Chick Tracts and
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah, and all of that. Yeah. But when it comes down to writing real characters of faith, he does a beautiful job with it. Hmm. And that's something that I really appreciate about him, that he can take these characters who have a deep and sincere faith and write them as such whole, well-rounded characters.
Cool. Sounds like there's kind of something for everybody in Discworld.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah.
For a long time, I joked that you had a Discworld anecdote for pretty much any occasion.
Yeah, and, you know, and that the series really does have ideas for everybody,
yeah.
I think. Terry Pratchett is an unconventional writer in many ways. Number one, he has a wandering, omniscient point of view, which not many authors do. Even if they're not going first person, they will usually stick in one character's point of view throughout a scene. Mm. Terry Pratchett, forget it. He will wander into whatever character's point of view or a completely omniscient point of view whenever he needs, whenever he wants. And that's extremely unusual these days. Mm. This book is divided up into chapters. Most of his books aren't. Mm. So, you know, somebody apparently had made a review of one of his books, you know, sort of taking him to task for not writing in chapters. And for this book, he did. Mm-hmm. And then he gave it up because he didn't like it, you know.
Yeah.
So there are some eccentricities about the books. And you just recognize his writing by its cleverness, its humor, and he's just one of the best complete writers that I have ever read. Hmm. By the end of the book, even if it's part of a series, things have been wrapped up, not in a neat bow, usually, but you understand everything that happened.
Yeah.
And no characters are just dropped. They're just fantastic books. And he'll bring characters in from other series. So in the Moise von Lipwig, in this book, after a particular disaster, you meet Captain Carrot of the Watch. Well, Captain Carrot is from the Watch books.
Right.
Yeah, and you also spot a suspicious-looking dog who is, in fact, a werewolf, and she is in a number of the Watch books and in a few other books as well. And so the characters cross in and out of each other's books. So
fun. I think that about covers it. So cool. Well, Katie, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, well, it was fun to talk about it. You know, I love to talk about books. So.
I do know you love to talk about books. So now that gives me some ideas about other probably audiobooks for me to check out at some point.
I really think you would enjoy Making Money.
Okay.
Which is the next Moise von Lipwig book. Mm-hmm.
It's set up right at the end of the book, right?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll probably give that a look at some point because I like to continue with characters, although I am kind of a famous starter of series where I read the first book and then sometimes usually what happens is I'll talk to someone who knows about the series and find out, is it diminishing returns or does this build? And
whereas I tend to mainline a series once I get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are very few times when I have just not finished a series. Mm. If it interests me at all, I will read through to the bitter end. Mm. I read all the Discworld books. The last few books suffer a little bit because Terry Pratchett was dying and he was just trying to finish them and get them out. And so there are kind of some, they're not as well rounded as the rest of his books, which is too bad.
Yeah.
But, you know that he was aware that he was dying. He had a form of Alzheimer's, which didn't impact his mind, but actually made him increasingly unable to do things physically.
Right. Well, on that fun note, I think we can
I know, it's a little depressing, but, Terry Pratchett, GNU.
Yeah, yeah. And his work survives him and his fans as well. So, And I want to thank you for introducing me to him, because I had never read anything by Pratchett before.
Did you read Good Omens?
No, I did watch the series, actually.
Yeah, That's Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. They were good friends all their lives.
Yeah.
Not all their lives, but for several decades. They were really good friends.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to give out any kind of contact information if people want to? You're not on Twitter or anything?
I'm not on Twitter, no. Okay. I'm on Facebook, and I may start a YouTube channel. Just because I'm a teacher without a classroom right now. And so if I do start one, then I will I'll let everybody know.
Is it going to be about linguistics?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll wrap it up there then. So thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
Okay.